Thanks for listening to the Best of the Doug Gottlieb Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 3 to 6 p.m. Eastern Time. That's 12 to 3 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Doug Gottlieb Show at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
This is the Best of the Doug Gottlieb Show on Fox Sports Radio.
Boom! What up, America? Doug Gottlieb Show, Fox Sports Radio. What up? Hope you're having a great day. Hope you enjoyed sports last night, specifically. No, not Blake Griffin's 50-piece he dropped. World Series underway on Fox, and the Boston Red Sox take a one-game-to-none lead. We'll start there. We will get you into some National Football League discussion. Mason Crosby, kicker for the Green Bay Packers. Going to ask him about the nightmare game where he missed kick after kick after kick. And then to come back and hit the game-winning kick the very next week. We'll talk with Mason Crosby of the Green Bay Packers upcoming. The Broncos release Swag Kelly. Chad Kelly now has hit for the cycle. You ready for it? He's been kicked off of his high school, college, and pro team. Right? I feel like that's Nuke LaLoosh level. Another new league record. So we'll get to some of that. And what the NFL has finally figured out that baseball and basketball figured out a while back or a while ago, depending on what part of the country you're listening into. Robert Woods of the Rams will join us. Matt Holliday, 7-time All-Star, a World Series champ, will get his thoughts on last night. And Greg Cosell from NFL Films will join us for his weekly stop. Man, do we got a lot to get to. Let's begin last night in Boston where the Red Sox took a one-game-to-none lead. And for the record, Clayton Kershaw wasn't great in a big spot again. Now, sometimes I think it's going to the well too much with Kershaw. He had an outstanding second outing with the Dodgers against the Brewers and then closed out the series out of the bullpen. You go to that well too much and this is what happens. He gets batted around, 4 innings pitched, 7 hits, 5 earned runs. He walked 3, struck out 5, struggled some with not just control but location. And pitching, much like real estate, is about location, location, location. Still, because Chris Sale wasn't great either, remember this is Chris Sale, stud pitcher for the Red Sox, he gave up 5 hits, only 3 runs. Struck out 7, but only lasted 4 innings as well, and he turned it over to the Red Sox bullpen, which has been much maligned. It was 5-4 in the 7th inning. The Dodgers had just plated a run. They had bases loaded. Manny Machado with the short sack fly only plates 1 run, but this game was very much hanging in the balance, and though Craig Kimbrell was yet to be used, and so was Nathan Eovaldi, the fact is, you tell me what's better, to have a 1-run lead or to have a 4-run lead. So with a 1-run lead, Pedro Baez was in the game at the start of the bottom of the 7th inning. Now Baez, who is right-handed, came in and struck out the first 2 batters he faced. He struck out 1, then they intentionally walked another. In order to get a double play first and second, then he struck out another. So you got runners at first and second and 2 outs. And Dave Roberts goes to the mound and pulls Pedro Baez out because by the numbers, he was better going to Alex Wood out of the pen. Here's what happened.
Check of the runners, the 1-0. Nooney swings it, drives one to left, high and deep by the wall, gone! 3-run pitch homer, Eduardo Nunez, can you believe it? And the Red Sox lead it 8-4.
Eduardo Nunez with the home run, and that was that, right? You get a 4-run lead at that point in the game. Eovaldi comes in and pitches well, so too does Craig Kimbrell, and the Red Sox take a 1-game-to-none lead in the best of 7 series. Remember, this is after an inning in which the Dodgers had bases loaded with only 1 out. They only plated 1 run, but they were putting pressure on that Red Sox bullpen. Well, Benintendi came in against Urias and hits a ground rule double. They bring in Baez. He strikes out Moreland. They intentionally walk Martinez. Xander Bogaerts strikes out swinging. And both Bogaerts and Moreland look completely overmatched by Baez. So, of course, they bring in Wood, and instead of having lefty-lefty as Devers was up for the Red Sox, Eduardo Nunez from the right side of the plate comes in. Now, for the record, if you wanted to go full analytics, if you really want to do it by the books, you could do what the Rays did earlier this year, what we've seen Joe Maddon do in the regular season. That's you could have stuck Baez out in right field. And then if they're going to pinch hit for Devers with Nunez, switch him and put Alex Wood in right field. In baseball, there is this where you take a pitcher out of the game, you can't put him back in. You're right. You can't put him back in. But if you take him off the mound and switch positions, you can put him back in. Still, it's the idea of going by the book, going by the numbers, when all you have to do is watch. And whether it was Moreland or Xander Bogaerts, they look completely overmatched against Baez. And sadly, this is the case in baseball. We have taken gut feel out of it. We go by the... What does the book say? Well, damn it, we're going by the book. Here's Dave Roberts explaining his decision.
Devers really good against a right-hander, and to get a guy off the bench in Nunez, I really liked Alex in that spot. I did. So whether they were going to hit Devers with a lead or go to the bench and go with Nunez, I still liked Alex in that spot.
Mm-hmm. And he hit a 3-run home run. Now, part of it is, it's like surgery, right? Anytime you go to the pen, you run the risk of a guy being off his game or a guy struggling with the magnitude of the moment. Baez had clearly settled in. He comes in and immediately strikes out Moreland. The magnitude of the moment was not too much for him. He was hitting his spots, and he was throwing in the mid to high 90s. And so every time you go in, you run the risk of an Alex Wood. We think, based upon the numbers, Alex, you like Alex Wood in that spot. But you have no idea how he's feeling on a Tuesday night in October on the road in Boston. When he thinks he's going to face a lefty, instead he faces Devers. You miss by that much because you're not quite there. You're not perfect. And this whole idea, well, you know, we asked him before the game. And what guy asked before a World Series game is going to say, "Nah, Skip, pass over me. I'm not locating today. No, thank you." But I don't think Dave Roberts wanted to do that. Like, Dave Roberts is a lifer baseball guy. Remember, Dave Roberts stole the most important base in the history of the Boston Red Sox when they're down 3-0 against the New York Yankees. But in order to get his job and keep his job, he had to please his bosses. And this is where it's relatable to all of us, right? That sometimes you got to do something because your boss says that's what you're going to do. Yeah, I don't know. My gut tells me this is not the good idea. Well, guess what? I'm the boss. It's a good idea. That's exactly what happened here. Precisely what happened here. It's not that Dave Roberts doesn't believe in the numbers. It's not that Dave Roberts didn't think lefty-lefty generally. But Dave Roberts could see what all of us saw, which is Baez was dealing, locating. And there is, again, this doesn't, you don't see this by the book. But if Baez comes up and he's facing a left-hander as a righty, knowing the numbers say go to Alex Wood and you stick with him, you don't think that pumps some confidence into Baez's blood? Of course it does. But the numbers don't tell you that. But this isn't about Dave Roberts being completely sold out to the numbers. It's selling out to what his boss wants, because that's how he got his job instead of Don Mattingly, and that's how he'll keep his job. And that's sadly the state of baseball. Andrew Friedman is the general manager. He comes from the Tampa Bay Rays. They go by the numbers, and that's exactly what they're doing here. It becomes overmanaging and paralysis by analysis. Just watch the game. How's Baez pitching? Great. Then don't do anything. Don't do anything. Would that happen in basketball? Guy hits two jump shots. Hey, you got to go get him. Why? Don't like this matchup as much. Would that happen in football? Man, they cannot cover Julio Jones. Oh, they changed the matchup. They put Richard Sherman on him. Let's stop throwing to Julio Jones. No, you make them, you make as much as numbers may tell you, hey, maybe it's time to do something else. Your gut has to weigh at least 50% of it. That's why it's important that you played. If you don't want any sort of relatable, if you don't want any sort of feeling of understanding of the game, hire a damn robot. But we've made robots out of smart baseball people. It's how Aaron Boone got the job. It's how Dave Roberts got the job. Listen, just manage egos and we'll manage the game for you. When the numbers say make a change, you make a change. And that game went from winnable to unwinnable with one ill-fated decision. Because the truth is that if he left bias in there and he said, you know, the numbers said Alex Wood, but I also knew that if I put Wood in, they'd hit a righty. They'd hit a righty against him. And I'm watching Baez, and he was pitching great. We see this with starting pitchers all the time. Guy is dealing. And so instead of letting him come out to start the next inning, we pull him because the book says, based upon this number of pitches against this hitter, let him pitch a guy to a guy. Because the old, what's the worst thing that could happen, actually happened when they made the change. This is what happens in relationships. You're going to do something for your wife, which you know is wrong, that you shouldn't do, or your girlfriend, or your boyfriend, or your husband, and you do it in your job all the time. I don't want to do this. I know it's not the right thing, but this is how I get to keep my job, because if I'm wrong, I will take the blame, but the truth is, this is why I got the job. My boss told me to do it.
Be sure to catch live editions of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at noon Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
How many years do you think Mason Crosby has played for the Green Bay Packers? Music, what do you think?
I'm going to go nine.
Nine. John, what are you going to get?
I'll say 12.
Okay. 12 years? 12 years.
Yes. Huh?
Okay. Mason Crosby joins us in the Doug Gottlieb Show on Fox Sports Radio. Mason, what's the correct answer?
12 is right.
12 is correct. Yeah. 12 is correct. Oh, wow. That's wow, that is stuff, really... God. Look at Ramos walking around.
Celebrate.
Yeah, he is absolutely celebrating. It's a really kind of amazing. There's like this weird world of kickers where, you know, Cody Parkey, whatever. I mean, he's been on several different teams. Dolphins last year, Bears this year. Who knows where he'll be next year? He signed a one-year big money deal. So many other guys kind of bounce around, with the exception of you, Justin Tucker. I'm trying to think who else. Gostkowski, right? Like, that. Those are the only three now that seemingly have a home and aren't leaving anywhere. What's the secret to longevity in one place?
Oh, man, I wish I knew I could give you some insight to a secret, but I think it's, you know, just being consistent, you know, showing up every day on and off the field and trying to be a consistent, you know, person in the locker room with the team, with your teammates, and, you know, going out on a daily basis on the field and, you know, doing your job at a high level and being able to handle, you know, success and, you know, and adversity. You know, you just kind of get connected with the people in the building and the community and all those things. And, I think, you know, obviously, athletics, you've seen it. Now, we've been lucky enough here in Green Bay. We've had a very consistent, you know, front office and, you know, head coach and coaching staff. So I think that helps as well. But, you know, in athletics, you just you get comfort level and you feel feel good, and you have your, you know, you have your guys, and you know, I think that that's definitely a part of it as well. So yeah, you look at the places that you mentioned, the guys who have longevity, that's probably a big factor of it as well, is having a comfort level with the people in the organization, coaches, front office, you know, et cetera. There, just you know, trusting and knowing that that we're going to do our job every day.
Yeah, making them helps too, right? Like, you know, like you do have to. There is other things important on the continuum, but making them helps. I remember, I think it was your first preseason game. Didn't you have like a 52-yarder against the Steelers? Was that, am I misremembering?
That's
years?
A long time ago. Impressive, yeah.
So process, if you can, like draw that, like this is your first kick as a pro and you're a 6th round draft pick. And one of the things that's interesting about the mercurial world of kickers is a lot of times guys are better in their second or their third spot, right? Cause the pressure, especially guys that are drafted, there's a lot of pressure on you to perform. Do you remember what it was like to line up that first time 52 yards away, Heinz Field, kick a field goal?
I do, yeah. You know, I was in a battle for the job there. Had a good position since I was drafted, but they put us through the ringer. I was competing with Dave Rayner, and I remember going out there for that kick and just feeling the freedom to just swing away and however the chips were going to fall, I'm going to just go out there and swing and make sure that that I hit a good solid ball. And I think at the time when I hit that 52-yarder, obviously it was preseason, but I think I tied the longest field goal in Heinz Field or something like that. I think it might have been broken now, but that was a big moment. And every kick like that. And I remember the first game of my regular season, there against the Eagles that same year. I kicked a 53-yarder, was my first field goal in the NFL as well. There in Lambeau. So those are memories. 12 years later, still stick with me. And I'll never forget those moments.
And of course, you guys won a Super Bowl that year. So you've shown that pressure doesn't. Pressure doesn't really rattle you. So what went wrong?
Nice segue there.
Well, I'm just like, look, I'm not trying to make it all Debbie Downer, but I do, how do you go from being one of the most consistent kickers in the NFL to just having one of those days against the Vikings where nothing goes your way?
Yeah, that's what it felt like. Yeah, just nothing. It's like nothing I've ever felt or, been involved in where I'd pick a line, felt good. Obviously, we're in a dome, so I'm just take my steps on the line that I felt good about. And it honestly, as I look at the film, all the stuff is like, when I was kicking from the left hash, did I think I was on the right hash? Like, did I have a bout of vertigo in that game? I mean, it literally, all those, as I watch it, that's almost like the way I would have to explain it, because it just felt like I'd pick a line, I'd commit to the kick, all the things, and it just, every strike, every ball was just slightly off, and every bad possible thing that could happen went wrong. So, yeah, I chalk that one up to, I've done this for such a long time, I could have never imagined a game like that, and it was by far, yeah, my worst performance. Even when I started sports, I can't look back at Pee Wee sports and think of a worse performance that I've ever had.
Of course, Ace Ventura, we learned that it was about the laces being out.
I wish there was something I could dissect in the film that was the case, but it was a strange one. It was just a nightmare that just kind of kept going. So unfortunately, I had a lot of attempts that game, and it just kind of kept snowballing.
Okay, you've never thrown your holder or your long snapper under the bus, but in reviewing it, was it all you?
Honestly, the tough part there is the last kick that I made, we ended up kind of rushing out there because we decided to go for a field goal,
right,
and they actually didn't get a kicking ball in, so we actually kicked a quarterback's ball that was laces straight back that got turned, and I made that one. So, it's unexplainable, honestly. And it's one of those days that I was happy to be done with. And, obviously moving on a week and 2 weeks now just to be past. But, it was strange. And, I've never put anything – over the top on anyone else. I know that I have to do my job at a high level all the time, but it was an interesting one, and we're continually working hard every day to make sure that nothing like that ever happens.
Okay, but if you write a script, it couldn't have been scripted any better to come down to a game winning kick the next week.
Right.
Now look, it's a 27 yarder, but are those really harder? Are they easy? Like, I don't know. There's got to be something to, like, if you kick a 52 yarder and you miss it, people are like, well, it's a 52 yarder. You know, 27 yarder when you had the yip, maybe the yips the week before. How amazing is, that the turnaround in just 1 week? You get another opportunity to show your team you belong.
Yeah, you know, like you said, opportunity. I was so thankful to have that chance and all the opportunities I had in that game. A lot of big kicks, throughout that game. And, I had a 51 yarder on that Monday night game that, as I went out there, I'm just like, well, this is kind of it. You better, just swing free and hit a good ball here, because these are the types of kicks you got to make to kind of get the confidence, everyone back, kind of, all right, he's passed it. And so knocking that one through was great. And so I had confidence, going into that game, as I kind of how I approached it through the week, felt really solid with my preparation. And then, the 27 yarder, it's just pick a line right down the middle and just rip it, just hit it hard. I felt like, our time on it was really fast. Operation was good. Protection was good. They rushed really hard. I almost got hit in the legs, by some of the San Fran guys, but I knew as long as I just got it off and got it quick, we'd have no issues there. So I'm thankful for Aaron and Devontae on that one for getting us as close as possible. So it made it a chip shot.
And Aaron, of course, being a solid friend, put his arm around you the week before, and then you paid him back with the game winner against the Niners. Doug Gottlieb Show, Fox Sports Radio. Mason Crosby, the Packers, is our guest. Graham Gano joined us, and he wasn't bragging because it was in fact true. Apparently kicked a 73-yarder that was called back because of a penalty in high school. What's your bragging kicker back in the day, I kicked it from the parking lot story?
let's see. I haven't kicked a 71-yarder or 73-yarder in a game, but my longest that I've kicked with a snap hold operation, just goofing around before a game is 71 yards. So, did that a few times in college. Here in Lambeau, pregame, I've stretched it back out to 65. So that's I think if the right conditions were there, 65 would be doable.
Good conditions this week in LA. Those are real grass field. It's not a dome, although we know you and domes maybe don't get along. You like,
yeah.
Like give me the nastiest weather possible.
I like playing outside. I'm okay with that.
Yeah, Mason Crosby joined us. Wait, you're getting into this custom cleat thing, right? You guys can't wear custom cleats in the game, but pregame, and then everybody tweets out some sort of, what's your custom cleats you're wearing?
Yeah, so this year I'm gonna wear a couple. Had the Vince Lombardi Cancer Foundation has made up of a couple pairs for me, and then my mom's organization down in Georgetown, Texas, is the Locker Foundation, and she actually had students at the local schools there do a competition, and they mocked up a pair of cleats that I sent down with the Locker logo and all the stuff on it. So I'll be rocking both those pairs at some point later on in this season.
All right, one of the things that kickers have is they have the ability to kind of be wallflowers to see what's really going on with the team. Take the temperature of the Green Bay Packers. How would you characterize kind of the mojo of the team heading into this battle against the LA Rams?
Yeah, I mean, you said the word battle. I mean, I think this team has shown that throughout this year. Obviously from the first game there against Chicago, coming back and getting that win. Pretty much, honestly, every game that we've been in, just – we've had some adversity, some adverse situations that we've had to battle back from and find ways to win. Unfortunately, some of those didn't go the right way, but I think this team has the makeup and has the chemistry to just find a way to battle through adversity and find ways to not let it be overwhelming and get us down and get into that hole. So I think our biggest thing is trying to start fast, try to get on the field and get this thing rolling a little bit quicker, because our second half of games have been exceptional. I mean, our 2 minute stuff has been excellent. So we just need to find that formula for that first half and early in games. But the week of work we're putting in right now, it's exciting. And yeah, we're excited to get out to LA and play a great team in the Rams, and go out there and have some fun and get some 80-degree weather and get some sunshine.
Yeah, listen, I hate to break it to you. It's only about 77, 76.
Oh, well, yeah that, not, that'll be a little rough.
Yeah,
so,
I mean, you know, and you're going to need some sunblock over there, but hopefully you and I think Greg the Leg might be back as well, so it might be a kicker's duel in the Coliseum. Mason, thanks much for being a champ, kind of walking us through your journey, and more than anything, congratulations on getting back on track. Look forward to seeing you in L.A. this Sunday. Thanks for joining us.
Awesome. Really appreciate it.
All right. That's, remember, the Locker and the Lombardi Cancer Foundation, two things he's wearing shoes for. That's his pregame cleats. And, of course,
be sure to catch live editions of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at noon Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific.
Chris Paul and Rondo don't like each other. This is a poorly kept secret that came to a head last week when the two got in a fight on the floor at Staples Center in the Lakers home opener against the Rockets. Punches were thrown, suspensions were handed out, and then yesterday Rondo went back in. This is the only time I'm going to address this. I had a mouthpiece in my mouth. I was exasperated because I was about to tell him to get the blank out of here. Look at my body language, my hands at my hip. I turn away for a second. I look at Eric Gordon and Melo in the video. If they saw me spit, they would have turned their face up or something. They would have had a reaction. Of course, the NBA went on his side, him being Chris Paul, and I got 3 games and he got 2. Everyone wants to believe Chris is a good guy. They don't know he's a horrible teammate. They don't know how he treats people. Look at what he did the last year he was in LA, trying to get to the Clippers locker room. They don't want to believe he's capable of taunting or igniting an incident. He comes out and says, "I spit," and the media sides with that. Y'all are playing me with these tricks and these mind games and tampering with the evidence. Ain't no way I intentionally spit with my body language the way I was. Now, whether he intentionally spit or unintentionally spit, back and to left. Was there a second spitter? It was Roger McDowell. That's who it was. There is video that appears to show him spitting on Chris Paul, or spittle coming out. You know, there is that. If all of a sudden some spit comes out of your mouth and lands on another person, you usually go like, "Oh, my bad," right? It's almost like slow motion when that happens. You say something and you overpronounce the word and it's in the air and you see it like, "Oh, it's gonna land on them," and then it's like, "Sploosh." My bad. Sorry about that. My bad. He also didn't say that. So there wasn't an admittance of unintentional spit. But he said, like, "Look, I didn't mean to spit. Everybody thinks he's a good guy. He's actually a really bad guy." And of course, we want to believe Chris Paul is a good guy because Chris Paul has those really funny State Farm commercials. Right? What if both of these things are true? Because the idea that Rondo is a better teammate when Rondo quit on the Mavericks, when Rondo essentially got run out of Boston, he was the one guy who, when they had the big three, was like, "Hey, how come nobody talks about me?" He didn't endear himself to the Celtics. He didn't endear himself to the Mavericks. Matter of fact, they cut him out of the playoff shares. He spent 1 year in Sacramento, which it was basically being out of the league. Like, that's basketball Siberia. When he was in Sacramento, that's basically saying, "I don't have a job anywhere else. I'm going to take whatever I can." And last year with the Pelicans, or you go to his year with the Bulls. He wasn't great with the Bulls. He played exceptional in the first two playoff games. They took a 2-0 lead when Isaiah Thomas's sister had tragically died. Remember that? Then he got hurt and the Celtics came back. Then he goes to the Pelicans and he has an okay year as a backup, but gets a start in the playoffs. And they beat the Trailblazers, and he gets a ton of the credit for it. I'm not going to sit here and tell you Rondo's not a good player, but this is basically what it is. Chris Paul believes, knows in his heart, he's a better player than Rondo, but he never got the opportunity to play with the players that Rondo's gotten to play with, like KG, Ray Allen, and Paul Pierce. And so he's jealous. Because in order to consider yourself an all-time great, you got to win a championship. And last year, his body let him down. It's let him down before. And oh yeah, by the way, he's played with the likes of the Hornets before they were the Pelicans and with the Clippers. Essentially two expansion franchises, considering where they were when he got there. And he's made them a viable playoff team, which in reality is just as good or close to as good as winning a championship with a loaded team. So, of course, he's just jealous, and Rondo's jealous of Chris Paul because he's like, look, I won a championship, and because I'm not loving towards the media, I don't get the love. That's what he thinks. I actually like this. This is really how the world works. I like to cheer for other people who I really like in this profession. I have friends all over this profession. Radio, TV, play-by-play side, analyst side, talk show hosts, you name it. I have friends. I also have people that I feel like I'm competitive with. And there's some people that I don't particularly like. And there's some people that I can tell you I'm openly jealous of because they've gotten opportunities that I feel like I'm better than them. I have no doubt that it goes that way for me. You know, I've gotten some incredible when I stop and take stock, I got some incredible opportunities. I'm doing the Final Four and having my own TV show and having my own radio show, doing an NFL game. I guarantee there are 30 people who do TV or radio nationally who are like, why is Gottlieb doing an NFL game on sidelines? Right? What? Why would you put him on sidelines? He does radio. He's got college. He's a basketball guy. I mean, my answer would be, I interview people for a living every day for 15 years. Like, I'm around sports. We talk NFL mostly in national radio. Why not? But if you want to take the negative route, you can. And this is, in my business, they say everybody hates everybody. And that's really what it is in that business. Maybe it's not everybody hates everybody. Maybe there is... there are some friendships and guys genuinely like each other that they play with, that they compete against. But I can tell you that everyone I know in any business they're in, they have a rival or a nemesis, somebody they don't like. I don't like that guy. I don't like that guy. And I'm okay with it becoming public. It makes it more intriguing, makes it more interesting.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.
You want to talk about outhouse to the penthouse. You go from the Bills to the Rams. You get to come back home and immediately play in a fun offense with a coach that gets it, and you just start winning. What's it like for him? We'll ask him. Robert Woods joins us on the Doug Gottlieb Show here on Fox Sports Radio. What was it like when you knew you were going to the Rams? Take me back when you know you were going to the Rams after spending 3 years in Buffalo. What was that feeling like?
First off, thanks for having me on, Doug. But just the free agency period, looking at teams, had a few teams to choose from, but looking at the Rams, I looked at Jared Goff, of course, young quarterback, number one pick, stood tall in the pocket, had the arm, hadn't really had a chance yet. And you looked at what Gurley done in the backfield, and then just some of the pieces that they were adding on. But the main one was just the head coach McVay, hearing what he did in Washington, with the control he had, the creativeness, a lot of players and coaches vouched for him. Saying, he's a, true genius. He really knows the game, and then just come out and just trusting it and coming out here and actually playing out exactly, how I thought, with the great coach, Jared Panningale, the number one quarterback, and just getting this high-powered offense rolling again.
Was there a moment to which you totally bought in? You know, because you heard about it and people talked about it. Was there a moment you're like, all right, this dog will hunt. This is the place for me.
First off, you know, just throwing with Jared. My first time throwing with Jared, I knew he had the arm to lift the ball nice and easy, right in the pocket. So just in shorts and t-shirts, I knew Jared had an arm. And then just coming to this offense, learning the offense, and then seeing the transition from OTAs and training camp, just McVay's transition, learning his players, learning the guy, and coming back with a whole new twist of his offense. Like that kind of fed off of us. I think just him being a mastermind, being creative, always thinking of new plays and ways to attack defense, it shows how we practice, and it shows on Sundays when we play.
How do you fight off complacency? Like right now you're 7-0, and I know polls don't matter, but there's not a human being alive that doesn't think you're not the best and most complete team in the National Football League. Obviously, you know, you've had some issues, injuries at kicking position, a couple other injuries. But, you know, it's not just that you have the wins. You've beaten legit teams or teams, good teams on the road. How do you fight off complacency?
Yeah, understanding it's a process. Understanding that it's literally a daily process to our success. It's not just weekly. It starts in our daily preparation. We come in and we work every single day, whether it's in the film room or in the weight room. We compete. And just go out there and execute our game plan. The biggest thing is just being ourselves and, you said, you know, not being complacent. I think we all been in different places on the other side of this thing where we had, you know, losing records or just a battling season. And a lot of guys know, you know, it could change very quickly. And, you know, just really it's the NFL. Every team, every week is a challenge. You have to be well prepared.
Cooper's been out, obviously, so that changes your role. What's that like for you when there's less options and now you're used in an even more prominent position?
Just work, just finding work through this team. You know, keep winning, keep being productive as an offense, and find ways to execute our game plan. Whether it's me playing in the slot position or playing outside, you know, we still have to execute our game plan. We all move around as receivers in this offense. But just being dialed in and still having the same goal as this team, and that's to win, and that's to finish our drive.
Robert Woods joining us on the Doug Gottlieb Show, Fox Sports Radio. Got to be weird for you, right? Or I don't know if weird is the word. What's the word you would describe? You know, you play at SC, you go away, you come back, and you're playing in L.A. Like, when you were at SC, there was no pro teams in L.A. So now there is, and now you're playing in the exact same stadium, albeit partially redone. What's that like for you?
Yeah, I wouldn't say weird. I would say comfortable. Been playing in that stadium, been going to that stadium for years, almost probably a decade or so. But just knowing that field, practicing in there in college from games to spring games, having the opportunity to come back as a Bill and play in that same stadium, which I thought would be my last time, and then coming back in the Ram, playing in that stadium. Played many, many games in that stadium, caught lots of passes and touchdowns, but I'll say the word is just comfortable. I think I play well. I feel like I'm playing in my backyard when I'm there.
All right, you got the all-whites, you got the all-yellows, you got the traditional blue and yellow. If Robert Woods is in charge, you get to pick the uniforms for some of these big games. Pack this week, Saints next week, Chiefs in Mexico City. What's the uniforms that you think are the cleanest?
Probably the throwbacks. I'll go with the throwbacks, blue and yellow. I love the helmet. We wear it with our yellow jerseys as well, but I love the blue face mask to go with the yellow horns. That would be my combination.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. When they were here, I grew up in Orange County, and when they were here the first time, like, I didn't like those Rams uniforms, but now as throwbacks, I love those. And then the all-whites are like the super, super way-back throwbacks, back to when they were the L.A. Rams the first time. But it's weird how what was once ugly is now super, super cool.
Yeah, exactly what you said. You know, those throwbacks, they're, you know, players want to wear their throwbacks or the retros. And because it's something you don't wear as much, you know, you bring out some different colors and get to bring out some different cleats as well.
Give me something about Goff that we don't know. Like, I met him before the draft, and we met him after his first year. And, like, look, he just seems like a regular sort of dude. But there has to be something behind the face mask in a game. Is he secretly super competitive, or is he always kind of that chill, laid-back guy?
I would say both. I think he is very laid-back. He's always in control, very confident. But I would say he is that competitor. I know he lines up, and he reads the defense, and I think he's very confident in our ability and our plays that we could compete with anybody. He loves his matchups. He takes his chances. And but the biggest thing, he's aggressive and he's poised at the same time, and I think that's a good combination for our quarterback. You want one who's aggressive and takes his shots and takes his matchups, but you want a quarterback who also is going to lead and stay poised no matter the situation throughout the game.
How different is it for you this year? And by that, I mean, you go back 2 years ago, and like you said, you were with the Bills. You played against the Rams. People always thought they were about a 500 team. Last year, it could be safe to say that you snuck up on people. This year, everyone knew that the Rams were going for it, right? Picking up Marcus, picking up Ndamukong, you know, making some changes to really kind of go for it. You haven't snuck up on anybody. Is it different this year than last year in terms of the crowds, the level of preparation from opponents? Is it different?
I would say so. Just a little bit last year, you know, we had a little streak going, and I remember, you know, another player, you know, looking to the side and question, like, hey, like, are we good? Like, you know, we actually pretty good, you know? And I would say from this year's transition is I feel like we know we're good. We know our team. We know our ability. But the biggest thing is this year from last year is kind of drowning out all that outside noise, outside factors, and literally everything that we talk about, everything, our goals, our game plans is always about us, always about executing our game plan. We go into the week where we know we match up with great opponents, but we know, like, if we play our game and we execute our game, play our you know, best performance, doesn't really matter what they do on their end because, you know, we're a complete team. We're going to play as a unit and just be ourselves and play as ourselves.
The Pride of Gardena, Sarah, Robert Woods joining us in the Doug Gottlieb Show. Only L.A. guys can answer these two questions. Team CP3 or Team Rondo?
Oh, Team Rondo, Lake Show. You got to go with Rondo.
Okay. Well, I mean, but CP3 did. He won with the Clippers. He didn't win at all, but he won with the won at a greater level with the Clippers than anybody. All right. How about this one? Team Kobe or Team LeBron?
Team Kobe. Happy LeBron's here. I grew up watching Kobe, seeing the greatness, seeing the transformation from 8 to 24, seeing his grind, and just kind of seeing his whole career. You see him being young Kobe, coming in, you know, airballing his shots, to come in, hitting game winners with three people on him. You've seen his process. You've seen his grind. You always hear about the work that he put in. And that was someone who I watched growing up, so I would definitely go with Kobe being Bryant.
All right, so you were the one who defaced the mural? That's what you're letting us in on? You were the one who's like, no way, no LeBron murals.
No, we'll take LeBron, best in the game right now for sure.
All right, I don't remember Kobe missing two free throws in the waning seconds to ice a game. I don't remember that. I like LeBron too, but I don't remember that. Robert, congrats on the season so far. Good luck against the Pack, and we look forward to talking in the very near future.
Thank you. Talk to you soon.
All right, this is Robert Woods. Gardena, Sarah, USC, LA Rams, and boy, the Rams have a high-powered offense. And, you know, he's been their leading wide receiver, I think, four of their seven wins.